Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and it's my pleasure and privilege to present three extraordinary guests on this program. First of all, we have Ray Coleman, an attorney for Bill Tyree, and also a law partner of William Pepper, the attorney for the late James Earl Ray, and known to this audience as the author of the book Orders to Kill. Ray, welcome back to our airwaves.
Thank you very much.
And Mike Rupert, former LAPD narcotics detective and a tireless crusader working to expose the role of elements of the intelligence community in the narcotics traffic. Mike, welcome once again back to our airwaves.
Thank you.
And it's my special privilege to present Dee Carone Ferdinand, the daughter of Albert Vincent Carone, one of the more important figures in American national security life, I would say, in the last half of this century, and someone who has never spoken publicly about her father's career. Dee, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much.
And this is, for me, I just want to tell all three of you that this is a very exciting journalistic experience for me, and I'm looking forward to speaking with you. Now, before we get to the substance of the interview, I just want to state that neither myself nor the station or any of the stations that carry this program have any direct information incriminating any of the people mentioned in this broadcast in any criminal activities, nor, as far as I know, have any of them been convicted of any crimes. I will also be referring to the various points of information as allegations for that reason. I'm a reporter and analyst, not an investigator, and so with that caveat, and by the way, none of you should misinterpret that as in any way casting aspersions either on you or any of the things you have to say. That's simply pro forma. Okay?
Okay.
Great. Fine with me.
All righty. Now, very briefly, by way of review for people that have not heard some of our previous broadcasts, Ray Coleman and Mike Rupert, the Bill Tyree lawsuit, let's touch briefly on Operations Watchtower and Orwell, the murder of Elaine Tyree, and Mike, the Cutolo affidavit. Gentlemen, proceed.
Okay. In 75, Bill Tyree joined the United States Army, and after training, became was ordered to participate in certain activities in South and Central America.
And he was a Special Forces trooper.
He was working with the Special Forces and had what he refers to as a paper flash, which is sort of on-the-job training. He then left the service, came back. When he came back, he met a woman by the name of Elaine Hebb, and they subsequently became married. He was assigned to Fort Devens, the 10th Special Forces Group, and she was assigned to Fort Devens, one of the quartermaster units up there. Somewhere along the line, she was recruited as a confidential informant for the Army. Kept notes. You could refer to them as diaries, notebooks, whatever you wish. But they were sort of in that format. When Mr. Tyree became disenchanted and wanted to leave the military operations that he had participated in, the couple began receiving threats, and this led to Mrs. Tyree's death January 30th in 79. Subsequently, Mr. Tyree was charged and eventually indicted and convicted of the murder. Since then, he's tried various and sundry avenues to appeal that conviction. Presently, we are in federal district court on in a civil matter, not a criminal matter, a civil matter, to regain the property, specifically the diary notebooks of Elaine's, and or monetary damages. That's basically where we are right now.
And reviewing for the audience, Operations Watchtower and Orwell were cocaine, respectively, cocaine importation operations, and Orwell a domestic surveillance operation aimed at neutralizing elements that might have sought to interdict that electronic beacons having been placed in the Colombian jungles by some of the troopers who were involved, allegedly involved, with Operation Watchtower. Mike Rupert, the Cutolo affidavit about some of these things ties in some of these activities with some of the defendants in the lawsuit who actually came on the national scene in the 1980s. Briefly sum that up for us by way of review.
Well, the Cutolo affidavit is, I guess, approximately 27 pages long. It's an extremely detailed account of both the Watchtower missions and the Orwell operations conducted out of Fort Devens. The affidavit was purportedly signed by Colonel Edward P. Cutolo, who was the commanding officer of 10 Special Forces Group Airborne at the time Elaine Tyree was murdered. Cutolo had earlier served in Panama with 7 Special Forces and the Special Forces troops operating in the Panama Canal Zone area, and had led a segment of the Watchtower missions on which Bill Tyree participated. Cutolo apparently did not write the affidavit, but he was, in my belief, a source for the information, or the source for the information contained therein. The reason why I say that is because he referred to the Panamanian Defense Forces throughout the affidavit, and they were not so named until approximately 4 years after his death in England in 1980. Nonetheless, over the course of years now, I believe the affidavit first surfaced in 1991, more and more information has come out to corroborate the information and statements made in the Cutolo affidavit, which is in itself a very specific document. But we keep getting more and more proof that what was said in there was accurate. That's my personal belief, that information was secreted within the National Security Agency, and upon Edward Cutolo's death, the affidavit was generated as kind of a doomsday device. But it outlays both the connections to CIA through Tom Clines, Ed Wilson, which lead to Ted Shackley, to Manuel Noriega as well, to an Israeli Mossad agent named Michael Harari, all in the Panamanian area of operations where the cocaine flights landed from Colombia. And it also specifically points out that George Bush was the director of Central Intelligence during the time period when many of the Watchtower flights took place. And up through the Orwell operations at Fort Devens in 78 and 79, the bugging of the courthouses, the affidavit clearly spells out that it was the Orwell missions were intended to conduct surveillance on prominent political figures, including Tip O'Neill, Edward Kennedy, and many others in the region, to keep a lid on the Watchtower missions.
And many of the people named in the Cutolo affidavit were associates of Messrs. Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel. And that cast of characters winds right on up through the 1980s when some of the defendants, such as President Clinton and Oliver North, also came on the national stage.
Very true.
Ray Coleman, briefly enumerate for us the defendants in this lawsuit.
Well, we start obviously with the Central Intelligence Agency. Federally, George Bush, Chip Tatum, Oliver North, and William Jefferson Clinton, the sitting president, George Bush being a former president. Locally, or statewide, we have a gentleman by the name of L. Scott Harshbarger, who is the attorney general running for governor, and the sitting governor, A. Paul Cellucci.
And by the way, Ray, locally is in Massachusetts from where you're speaking.
Yes, it's the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Right.
Right.
Proceed.
Harshbarger was the district attorney immediately after Billy's conviction. He also knew of the type of police force that did the investigation, since he was asked by the town of Ayer, and that's A-Y-E-R, to investigate the police force. His investigation caused the termination of approximately, I guess, 4 or 5 of the offices, about a fourth of the force. And so he knew very well the kind of investigation that would have gone on, and how much pressure was needed to get the investigation the way the police wanted it. Mr. Salucci was the law partner of a gentleman by the name of McKittrick. And Mr. McKittrick was the attorney for the co-defendant, the person who allegedly, although there is a conviction, but the person who has been convicted of actually murdering Elaine Tyree.
Okay, and also Chip Tatum.
Chip Tatum's participation is the fact that he was one of the pilots and has so stated that basically transported the contraband drugs into the United States. He's named as a defendant partially because, obviously, the more information we can get, the easier our job is going to be. And he has become very disenchanted with the government and the way they treat their people. So he's what could be called a friendly defendant.
Okay. D. Ferdinand, before we get into how your father ties into the Tyree suit, and we're going to be getting into the details of his career later, if you could tell us who your father was.
Who my father was. He was a colonel in the Army Military Intelligence, CIC. He was a paymaster for the CIA. And he was also, I will refer to it in New York terms, as a bag man to the New York City Police Department. To look the other way, he paid the police department to look the other way for the drugs coming in from the agencies to be brought into the families for distribution.
Now, by families, you mean?
Organized crime.
Okay. We will get into the details of your father's career later in the broadcast, because he's a fascinating individual. Now, the aforementioned Bill Tyree, the person who has filed this lawsuit, mm-hmm. was known to, it was spoken of by your father under the name Sandy. Could you fill us in on how your father came to figure into the Tyree lawsuit?
Okay. Dad used to refer to a fella by the name of Sandy in the, let's say, late 60s, early 70s. He was Special Forces. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And he had gone on a couple of missions with my father, one being into the South American region, and what you refer to as Watchtower, my father never referred to as Watchtower. He would talk about beacons and runways being set up for drug running purposes. One operation in particular that he referred to as far as Sandy was concerned was an operation known as Operation Sandman. And that's how this kid got his nickname, because of his light-colored hair, etc.
What are you in a position to tell us about Operation Sandman, if anything?
They eliminated people that had to be eliminated from different countries. That caused a problem for the agency.
Okay, so this was an international assassination operation.
Yes, it was.
Okay, proceed.
Okay. At a certain point, my dad had discussed the fact that this kid, Sandy, was being pretty much set up for things, for the murder of his wife, okay? He was being framed. And he wanted to see about helping this kid. And that was later on in years he had discussed things when he got sick. Never discussed it in the years of 68 or 69. The only thing that he used to say was this kid Sandy was a card, and he'd make one hell of a career person. Well, when Dad got sick, he started talking about this kid who needed to be helped and that he was sitting in Massachusetts. And Dad had certain, let's say, Dad had diaries that belonged to, let's say, Sandy or his wife. At this time, I did not know this was Bill Tyree. And what had happened, I was speaking at one time with a man by the name of Bill McCoy. And Bill McCoy had been telling me about Bill Tyree, And Bill Tyree was looking at a certain point for J.J. Cotolo, Colonel Cotolo's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
McCoy had called me on this, and he asked me if I could find her because she was in Albuquerque. Now, how things came about, I had heard of Colonel Cotolo because my father worked with Colonel Cotolo on certain missions or operations. And I found J.J. for McCoy, and subsequently, I wound up talking to Bill Tyree.
By the way, I want to interject that Bill McCoy was a former military investigator and also an investigator for the Christic Institute lawsuit. Go ahead.
Okay. So I had told Bill McCoy that I wanted to speak to Bill Tyree for the simple reason of the Cotolo connection. And he had told me it wasn't necessary. Well, there was a magazine newspaper put out, Mike, am I right, Free American?
Yes.
Okay. And Bill Tyree used to get this newspaper. Well, the editor of the paper put my father's story in. And when he put my father's story in, the newspaper went to Tyree, and he saw Carone. Well, when he saw Carone, he discussed this with Bill McCoy, and it turned out this is how Bill Tyree and I got together. Bill Tyree and I are talking one day, and Bill Tyree says to me, you might know me better by the name Sandy.
And
that's how I knew who Sandy was, after Bill and I started talking. And I knew that my father had had his diaries, or Elaine's diaries, excuse me. I do not know how my father got the diaries. I just know that he turned them into the agency at Langley.
Right. Ray Coleman, how do the diaries figure into this lawsuit? What are you in a position to tell us about that?
Well, the diaries are a documentation of information Elaine picked up in her job at the bachelor officer's quarters. And those activities, particularly the illegal activities of the military in the Fort Devens area, the special forces basically throughout New England. And the prosecution at the time used several letters that were written prior to the marriage to give a motive, as it were, to show a motive to the jury for the conviction. We feel that these diaries actually point the finger to several other people that would have at least as great a need to have Elaine dead, or possibly even a greater need.
Is there any indication that the diaries might have survived? Because certainly they were turned into the CIA and had information in them that were sensitive. What guarantee is there that they're still around?
The guarantee is speculative. They could be used for blackmail, which is not beyond the CIA's capabilities. And so we feel that if the diaries themselves are not in existence, then there are copies. The fact that the CIA had them at one particular point would indicate to people who are familiar with the CIA mentality and conduct that probably they still are in existence.
And I think it's important to note here, if I can jump in for a second,
sure,
that passages from the diaries, if I'm not mistaken, Ray, are quoted in the Cotolo affidavit, which are indications that those diaries also passed through the hands of Ed Cotolo.
And I've got to correct myself here, okay?
Go ahead, Dee.
It was in 79, not 69. Dad started working with Billy in the late 70s.
Right.
In 68, 69, that is when Dad crossed over into the agency. So just let me correct myself there.
Okay. Now, speaking of your father, he wore many different hats. You've already alluded to his work as an officer in the military, mm-hmm. and also with the Central Intelligence Agency, and also interfacing with some of the families. Your father was nominally also a New York City policeman.
Yes, he was.
And a detective first grade, as I recall?
Yes, he was. My father started out as a patrolman, and from there he went into vice. He worked very closely with the Prince of the City, Bob Lucy.
Right.
Okay. Retired in 1966 from the police department. In all that time, he was still with the military and then crossed over with the agency.
In the 1960s?
Mm-hmm.
How in telling your father's story, and he again touched on many different bases. Telling your father's story, Dee, how would you start? Would you start with his youth in the military in World War II? You tell the story as you would like to tell it.
Dad's involvement with organized crime family started with Vito Genovese. When he was a kid, he did running work for them. If Vito wanted something brought to somebody, my father would, he'd give my father like a quarter or whatever, because my father pretty much lived on the street, okay? Vito had a bar down the street from where my father's mom's apartment was. It was in the Red Hook section of Brooklyn. My father many nights slept under the stoop, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Vito Genovese would, I guess he felt sorry for him, and every once in a while he'd give him a nickel or a dime or a quarter. Got Dad a singing job for Prince Spaghetti when he was 10 years old at like 50 cents a week. Well, as Dad got older, his allegiance was to Vito Genovese.
Right.
Because this is the man who pretty much took care of him. And on nights when Dad could not get into Grandma's apartment, they would let him sleep in the bar. All right?
Okay.
Okay. From there, Dad went into the military. He was in the OSS, the original OSS.
Which was the Office of Strategic Services and World War II's equivalent of the CIA for the benefit of younger listeners.
Right.
Proceed, Dee.
Okay. And when he came out of, when he was discharged from World War II, Dad went into the police department. I don't know why he went into the police department, but that's the road that was chosen. He was perfect. He had family ties. He had military ties. And they used Dad, both of them.
When you say both of them, meaning?
Military, CIA, okay?
Okay.
Because the drug running just did not start. The drug running started many, many years ago.
Sure.
Okay.
If I can jump in briefly, historically there is an excellent record in a number of sources that Vito Genovese, when he was sprung from prison for OSS, spearheaded the Allied invasion into Sicily, and Alfred McCoy, in his book The Politics of Heroin, documents Genovese's use by the OSS and documents immediately after his arrival in Sicily an explosion in the amount of heroin available in the United States, which continued up through the 40s.
Well, Luciano, my understanding was Lucky Luciano, who was actually the spearhead with regard to the invasion, but I know Vito Genovese became an important official with the U.S. military occupation government in Sicily.
That's correct.
And so obviously Vito Genovese also wore a U.S. government hat, and with his connections going to Al Capone, that certainly would have set the foundation for the many hats that Al wore during his career.
Dad was a son of Vito Genovese's heart, not blood, okay?
Right.
A great deal of trust in my father, but like I said, he molded my dad. He honestly did. So my father's first allegiance was to them. And whatever they wanted done, no matter what it was.
Mm-hmm. By the way, too, I think that as a brief editorial comment, those who would be judgmental the families or organized crime should bear in mind not only the social conditions that obtained at that time, but the relatively few options that were available to a lot of the people who lived in the neighborhoods where they held sway. And your father's story, having grown up literally on the streets, is not at all unusual and should be borne in mind. We've got 3 or 4 minutes on this part of the interview, Dee. Your father was in the Army in World War II and came out of World War II, went to work for the New York City Police Department. And as you were growing up, you came to know a number of people who figure on the national scene, including someone known to you as Uncle Sonny.
They were all my uncles.
can you tell us who, and we've got just a couple of minutes on this side, can you tell us briefly who some of these uncles were?
We had Sam Giacano, also known as Momo. We had Santos Traficante. We had Paul Castellano. We had Joe Priscilla. We had Joe Colombo.
Those are certainly some of the most important names in the families in the post-World War II period. And Uncle Sonny, in particular, was someone who was of interest to people in this audience.
Well, Sonny was very involved with the drug trade out of Florida, out of Miami, really.
Mm-hmm.
He took care of a lot of that area, you know.
And Sonny, that is the name that he was known to you by, but he was known to others as Santos Traficante.
Well, yeah, but to me he was Uncle Sonny.
Right, right.
Yes.
And so these were people that you actually got to know during the course of growing up.
Well, yeah, because they were always around.
Okay.
I never realized the family was dysfunctional. I thought it was very normal.
And was this none of these people was represented as being anything other than just good friends of the family or uncles?
They were business associates. They were uncles. You know, what people see of them on the street, you do not see behind closed doors.
Sure.
In family situation. Never. And they were always there. They were always at functions, different people's homes. My wedding, my son's christening, you know, they were always there. If you ever needed anything, you could always go to one of your uncles.
And I think it's worth mentioning here that there was someone else of great interest at her son's christening, too. You might ask, Dee, you want to tell him?
William Casey. My father was good friends with him.
Of course, William Casey was director of the Central Intelligence Agency, had actually been in the OSS along with your father, and was Ronald Reagan's campaign manager. And
he was also very good friends with my father and Paulie Castellano.
Right, right. I was setting him as a national security figure for the benefit of the audience. We're going to talk about William Casey and many other interesting associations that your father had during his professional life, Dee. And I'd also like to touch on something that is undoubtedly painful, but the circumstances of your father's passing. However, we're going to be doing that in the next part of our interview. We've been speaking with Ray Coleman, the attorney for Bill Tyree, and a law partner of William Pepper, the attorney for the late James Earl Ray, and known to this audience as the author of the book Orders to Kill, Mike Rupert, former LAPD narcotics detective and a crusader against the intelligence community's involvement in the drug trade, and Dee Carone Ferdinand, the daughter of Albert Vincent Carone, one of the most interesting and arguably one of the more important national security players in the post-World War II period, and we will be visiting with them in our next half hour. For Ray Coleman, Mike Rupert, and Dee Ferdinand, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.